Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Mulman. This is the My View Matters Radio Network. It is Sunday night at 7 p.m. As usual, we are here live and available to you if you're listening to the podcast right now. We do like to take your calls if you'd like to call in and talk about any of the issues that we talk about. And for those of you listening live, you can do so by calling area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. We do have the chat room open. I just opened that up here a couple of minutes ago, so if you tried before and it was closed, you can try again now. It is back. Boy, what a week. You know, we're in day 13 of the government shutdown. And last week I mentioned I actually gave the wrong amount of time, and I apologize. My memory was being dyslexic. I said that the longest the government had been shut down was 12 days. And what I meant to say was the longest it had been shut down was 21 days. And that was at the end of 1995. It'll be interesting to see what happens here. I don't know what's going to come of all this. The polls are a bit interesting on all of it. And, of course, there's a lot of spin going on and a lot of this and that. And, of course, they continue to have the national monuments closed just to punish the people. But before we get too serious tonight, as usual, I'd like to start out with the randomly generated political generator phrase of the week. And this week we have, quote, "My opponent is palling around with greedy insurance companies, MSNBC cronies, and pedophiles." Gotta love the political rhetoric generator. Also, on a not too serious note, The Onion had an article this past week about how the interns for the Congress people were withholding certain favors of the Bill Clinton-esque type until the government was started back up again. And I thought that was pretty entertaining. And I think it's the first Onion article that's mentioned our representative here in the 4th District, Thomas Massey. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. Just, you know, a silly article, of course, not true, whatever. But it's The Onion, and it's always entertaining. But the shutdown does continue. We're on day 13, as I mentioned, and I don't see really an end to this in sight. I think that I don't think any more damage can be done to the Republicans, and so I don't think the Republicans have any urge to negotiate at all. I don't see anything at all where the Republicans have anything to lose at this point. The Democrats are starting to take more and more of the brunt of it all. The polls show that the Republicans in Congress are taking more of a hit than the Democrats in Congress, but taking an equally bad hit is the Obama administration itself. And I think that that's interesting. I don't know what that necessarily will translate to electorally, if anything at all, since Obama is lame ducked. And I guess that's really what it comes down to is now we're in a situation where the Republicans can't take any more of a beating anyway, politically. And Obama doesn't care because he's lame duck. So who's left? Who cares? Well, I would think that the congressional Democrats and the Senate Democrats would care. You know, they're not lame ducked. They can still take more damage. And I think that you're going to see the public's mood continue to shift on this. We had reports earlier today of the million veteran march, which based on the media article says that there were 92 veterans, which I can see in this picture there's more than 92 people, but whatever, they claim there were 92 veterans that came and tore down the barricades, or as they're calling them now, the barricades, and tore those down and basically took back the World War II memorial. There were some Republicans there on the scene who gave speeches. Ted Cruz was among them. I thought the you know, the whole thing, especially with the Washington Monument, is really just, it's just there to cause pain. They're not really, the World War II Memorial isn't guarded 24/7 normally. And to put extra security detail on the Washington Monument, and not the Washington Monument, but the, the World War II Memorial, is silly. It kind of goes to exactly what the problem in government is. Now, they call this, and the reason I keep calling this the Washington Monument, the phrase for what's happening here is called the Washington Monument Syndrome. And the idea behind it is that you're punishing people by taking away public access to public monuments to try to get what you want. It's also called the Fireman First Principle. There's a number of other names. But essentially, it's when government entities don't get what they want out of the people, they start hijacking the people and holding the people hostage to get what they want. And I'm telling you that that's not a good thing, and it's not a surprise to me that people are getting upset about it. And while, as I mentioned, Republicans have taken the brunt initially, I think the longer this goes on, the Republicans can't lose anymore. And I think the Democrats stand to lose the most now. And so I guess this puts the ball squarely back in the Democrats' court for their next move. And, of course, they're under some sort of strange obligation to protect Obama, but Obama doesn't care. He's lame-ducked anyway. So what does he care? He doesn't have to run for office again. I think that'll be a very interesting thing to kind of watch this as it all plays out. The Park Police earlier, and I don't know if I reported on this last week or not, had tried to close down Mount Vernon. And it turns out that Mount Vernon is actually privately owned. It's not owned by the National Park Service. But it turns out that the National Park Service helped pay 50% for the parking lot out in front of Mount Vernon. And therefore, the Park Service believes that they have the right to close Mount Vernon just because half of the parking lot was paid for by the Park Service, even though the rest of the property has been privately funded and is privately run. And, you know, this gets back to it here. And that's another place where I really wish some of these people would stand up. You know, we've heard the case of the people who live in national parks being pushed out of their homes, the elderly folks. We've heard all these stories about just the arbitrary silliness of all of this, that, you know, it's very obvious that it's meant to be punitive. It's meant to be punishing the public. And quite honestly, I don't think the public's going to stand for it much longer. And I think that that's what we saw here today with the so-called Million Veteran March, that obviously it wasn't a million veterans, but, you know, a group came and tore down the barricades. And I think that that's going to continue. I think I think we're going to see more and more people get more and more fed up and just start acting out in this way. And folks, I apologize. My voice is a little bit scratchy because I just came in from mowing the yard. It's been a crazy, crazy week and weekend. And I needed to stay ahead of the yard, so I ran out and got a few hours of mowing in right before the show. So if I cough a little bit, I apologize now. Anyway, back to the point here. As I've been mentioning, the Republicans especially have been hammering Obama over the shutdown and really trying to make hay over it. But they're not getting a whole lot of traction. And part of that is in part because of the media. Right, but there's going to come a point where the media can't cover for Obama and the Democrats anymore. And you're going to see more and more of the I really believe you're going to start seeing the polls start to hammer congressional Democrats coming up. Because congressional Republicans, as I mentioned, they can't get any lower. I mean, there's they're just not going to be able to get any lower. I mean, and really, it's not that great. So one of the earlier polls, or no, this is one of the more recent polls here, show that 62% of adults mainly blame Republicans for the shutdown. Half blame Obama and congressional Democrats. So I guess there's 12% or more that blame everybody, probably more because there's always that 6% who don't know what to do and don't know what's going on and don't know anything. I don't know who those people are. I believe they live in caves. Anyway, Washington Post ABC poll said 70% of Americans disapprove of the GOP handling of its negotiations, 61% disapprove of Democrats, and 51% disapprove of Obama. Now, what's interesting is there's been a couple of polls that have come out that have shown that this has really hurt Obama's approval ratings as well. But the data is skewed, and it goes back and forth, and it's kind of interesting. I don't exactly know how to explain the disparity in a couple of these polls, but one poll has his approval rating at 37%, while another poll run the same time shows it at 49%. Now, Obama's been running below 50% for a while on approval, but 37 is pretty darn low. And I don't know what to believe. I tend to think that perhaps it's in the middle of those two. Maybe it's a low 40. But I don't see how anybody comes out on the winning end of this shutdown. I think that at this point, I think we talked about this last week, that Obama had backed himself into a corner and the Republicans had backed themselves into a corner. And basically, they're not able to move. Neither one of them can give on this issue. And meanwhile, as I mentioned, the congressional Democrats are the only ones who can make anything happen. And they seem unwilling to do anything with Obamacare. And in fact, Harry Reid early on was saying he was refusing to negotiate. Now, I haven't heard them use that phrase lately. And in fact, I've seen something where now they claim that they've been asking for negotiations and the Republicans won't negotiate, even though they were the Democrats were the ones out saying they would not negotiate. It's going to be interesting. Congress's approval rating is now 5%. 5%. And I think it's pretty funny. I mean, that's pretty low. See, that means that 95% of Americans either disapprove or are unsure of their approval or disapproval of Congress. And, you know, these things are always funny. And I don't know if we've talked about this on the show or not in the past, but, you know, you'll see these things that say people disapprove of Congress and they disapprove of Congress. You know, oh, my gosh, you know, Congress only has a 20% approval or a 10% approval or now, oh, 5% approval. But when you go back to the district and you look at who has approval within their district, the numbers are drastically different. You know, for instance, I would suggest that Thomas Massie probably has more than 50% approval here in the 4th District. Despite the fact that, you know, nationally, he's been actually personally singled out as one of the 10 Republicans causing the shutdown. And we'll get to that in a minute because that's absolutely hilarious. But these polls, you know, it doesn't matter if Congress itself has a 5% approval rating. If your congressman has within their own district an above 50% approval rating, because that means they're going to get reelected. Now, some of this has to do with gerrymandering. Of course it does. The way these districts have been carved out over time, you know, are, let's just say they're less than ethical in how they've been carved. And we'll leave it at that. But beyond that, I think that one of the big problems in general, and something I've railed on for years, is that the House of Representatives is no longer very representative. And I think we've talked about this on the show before, that, you know, the number of U.S. congressmen originally was 33, or there was one congressman for every 33,000 people. And you have to set aside the three-fifths clause and all that silliness because, I mean, obviously, thank goodness we don't do that anymore. But at the time, it was three-fifths clause, you know, exempted. So even still, you could say somewhere around, you know, between 33 and 55,000 people per congressman. Today, there are over 700,000 people per congressman. Now, the number of congressmen have been increasing over time, though not exactly proportional to population. But in 1912, they voted to cap the U.S. House of Representatives at 435 members. And there's been a couple of times when they've admitted new states, when they admitted Hawaii and Alaska, that there were more than 435. But at the next reapportionment, the next time they did a census and carved everything back up again, the number was taken back down to 435. So this means that there are now 700 and something thousand people per U.S. congressional district, when originally there were 33,000, well, let's say between 33,000 and 55,000 people per district. Now, you fast forward also, and just to give some bit of a comparison, today there are over 45,000, or roughly, excuse me, there are roughly 44,000 and change people per state house representative. So our state house representation in our state house is actually less in most cases than what we had originally in the original U.S. Congress. Now, if you think about that, remember, this is the House of Representatives, both at a national and a state level. The job of those folks is to represent the people. And what I've always pointed out is it becomes very hard to truly represent 720-something-thousand people, or whatever it is, 700-and-some-thousand people. First of all, there's no way in the world you could ever know that many people. I mean, really. How many people really have met Thomas Massie? I have, by coincidence. But most people have not met Thomas Massie, nor have they met Andy Barr, who I've also met by coincidence, but Ed Whitfield, Brett Guthrie, Hal Rogers, or John Yarmouth. I mean, the reality is most people have not met their representative. Well, how is that person supposed to even begin to represent you if they've never met you? They don't know who you are. They have no idea who or what you're about. So my answer to a lot of this for a long time has been to increase the number of representatives and decrease their pay accordingly. Because we shouldn't be paying people lifetime careers. You get rid of the pensions, you get rid of their, you cut their pay in half, get rid of their pensions, cut their staff budgets, because you won't need that as much staff because you're not, you know, representing as many people. This could be done. And the reality is you shouldn't be going to Congress for the pay anyway. That wasn't what our founders intended. So I think that that's a way that we can make government more in touch with the people. Now, sadly, I mean, you can get into the whole question about numbers. And, boy, well, that's a slippery slope because how many representatives should there be? I don't know. I think here in the state of Kentucky, personally, I think I'd like to see both the House and the Senate double. I think that that would make it so that it is more reasonable for the common man or woman to run for those offices and actually have a legitimate chance of winning. Today's House districts have about 44,000 people each. Now, 44,000 is still a good number, still a lot. And I think that if you cut that down to about 22,000 apiece, it suddenly becomes very feasible to run a legitimate campaign from a grassroots or a local level and win. Likewise, our state Senate has 37? I always forget that number. I want to say 37 people. I don't know why I always have trouble remembering that number. But let's double it. And that should take the number of people per district from 110,000 per district, as I remember that's the number, down to about 55,000 per district, which brings it a lot more in line with what we're already seeing for the state house, but making it more accessible to the average person. Because what we need more of is the average person in office. We need more regular people in office. We need less career politicians. We need fewer people out for their own ego, for their own benefit, for their own looking out for number one and not really being a representative. And it becomes a lot easier to know that when the races are far more local. You can actually meet someone, if they have to campaign to 22,000 people total, and you figure in children and all that are in there too, so now you're down to about, 16,000 adults. And of those people, let's say 60 to 70% of them are registered to vote. On average, it's 60%. So let's say 60% of those are registered to vote. Well, now you're down to 9,600 people. And then 9,600 people, it's possible to meet that many people. In the course of a year, campaigning, going door to door, you could probably meet 9,600 people. 9,600 people would be able to know their representative. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, that I think could really bring some badly needed accountability to state government. Now, you can apply that same principle to the federal government. And unfortunately, unless you're willing to get crazy on it and really, really increase the number of U.S. representatives, it's still going to be a number that's not quite right. It's still not going to be great. But let's say you quadruple the number of U.S. reps. That'll take it to 1,600, 1,700 and change. I'm trying to do the math in my head, and it's just not happening tonight. But let's say it's 1,700 U.S. reps. You quadruple the number, you cut their pay so that they're only getting paid and they only have congressional staff of 25% of what they got. And while we're at it, let's get rid of that pension too. And now all of a sudden you have people that are in it, at least more likely to be in it, for the right reasons, because they're not getting paid the big bucks. There's going to be less power because the power is going to be further distributed. So now you have less of a chance of getting people with a true sociopathy involved, right? Not that it won't happen, but it's more likely that you're going to have legitimate people running for those offices. And by quadrupling, you're looking at 150,000 to 170,000 people per district. And that's not that much more than what we have today for our, that's 50% more than what we have today for our state Senate seats. And I think that's a workable number. I think that's one that if you had your state house down around 22,000, if you had your state Senate down around 55,000, that having U.S. Congress at about 100 to 150,000 is kind of a nice little sweet spot. I think that's actually where I'd prefer it to be, is to be in that range. And, you know, when they capped the House of Representatives at 435 back in 1912, there were approximately 110,000 people per district. So over the course of just over 100 years, it had quadrupled from 33,000 to 110,000. And, of course, keep in mind that also was rearranged with the whole three-fifth clause, and then also there was a large amount of immigration at the time. So taking all that into account, whatever, I still really believe that from a democratic republic, with the idea that we have a republic that is representative of the people, that being representative of the people is crucially important. If you're not representative of the people, then you have a government that the people don't feel connected to. You have a government that the people don't feel is in their control. And that's exactly what we have today. That's exactly what the founding fathers rebelled against when we broke away from England, a government that wasn't listening, a government that didn't care about the everyday lives of people. Not that they wanted them involved, but they more wanted them to leave them alone. And in many ways, we have that today. And in general, if you have a government that is forcing you to do things and telling you must do this and you can't do that, and you must do this and you can't do that, you're going to feel upset about that. Especially if it, you know, obviously if it's something you want to do or something you don't want to happen, and the government says the opposite must be true, then of course you're going to be upset. But you get even more upset when you feel like no one in government even cares or listens or even knows who you are. It's ironically a principle of good government, that good government should be listening to the people. And I would put forth that it is impossible for government to listen when one U.S. House rep has 700 and something thousand people that they're supposed to be listening to. It's just not possible. It's not possible. I got more to talk about on this, but we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break here. I see I've got somebody in the queue. Hang on there just a minute. We will get to you just in a moment. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. We're going to take a few-minute break, and then we'll be back. Stay tuned, and there we are right there. I'll be right back here in just a few minutes. Hold on.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding, or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. And as mentioned, there are shows on the network Sunday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And speaking of our shows during the week, I am bringing on now here Ed Springson, host of the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night shows. Ed, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Ken?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I can't complain a whole lot. Just wanted to let you know that this whole House of Representatives toss that you're having right now is really interesting because, you know, most people don't know a history here, but here's the history. There is really only one constitutional rule relating to the size of the House. And that rule simply says that the number of representatives shall not exceed one for every 30,000. So what that tells me is, based on that one constitutional rule, that we should have one representative per 30,000 people, no more than that, which means, which is really unrealistic today, because that would mean we would have 10,000 reps today, which is workable at all. However, it does get interesting because Congress actually fixed the number of voting House members, that's the key, at 435 in 1911. So they decided the number was 435. It was decided by Congress, but there was no vote. There was no constitutional amendment, nothing that allowed them to do that. So I thought that was a pretty interesting paradox.
Well, and you know, there's a website dedicated to this whole thing, and it's been a while since I've been out to it, but since I kind of got onto the tangent, I didn't really mean to stay here this long, but 30-thousand.org, so it's the word 30, and then hyphen, thousand.org, has basically a plan that goes through and explains how we got to the point where we have so many people per representative. And, you know, according to this anyway, there was actually more in 1913 than what I thought. They're showing 210,000 people in 1913 per U.S. rep. Today it's obviously over 700,000. And they make the same point that I do, which is that it is impossible for one person to represent 700,000 people. It's just not possible. I mean, how could you ever know the diverse interests? You look here, now, Ed, you're in Louisville, right? So you've at least owned, yours is contained in Jefferson County, and so at least, you know, you guys are just Jefferson County, and it's really about Jefferson County. But you look at some of these districts, I mean, the 4th District's pretty bad. I mean, we go from around Louisville all the way up the river, all the way across the top, back down to Ashland. Basically, we sit about 40 miles north of I-64 all the way across the state. The 1st District has to be the worst, the one all the way out west that then has this little tail that sneaks underneath the 2nd District and almost touches Lexington. You're talking about a 4-hour drive? Each from end to end of the district, that's insane. I mean, how can Ed Whitfield represent the people of Western Kentucky and the Bluegrass region in Southern Kentucky? It's just not possible.
It's not possible. I mean, I did an article on this back in 2008 You know, you guys go to edspringsteen.com and look up House of Representatives. You'll find that article. But it's not possible. And remember, these districts are all gerrymandered so that you can get political favor. I mean, if you're in a Democratic district and you want to keep it, then you're going to gerrymander it to make sure it benefits you. Same thing on the Republican side. But, you know, it's
sure.
really interesting because back in 2008, our representatives, there was one per 689,000, and you're right, it's increased since then. I don't understand it either. I really don't, and I don't understand how they were able to put a cap on without any kind of a constitutional amendment or a vote by the people. So it's very interesting because, once again, in my opinion anyway, it looks like Congress gets to do whatever they want to do regardless of the Constitution or what the people want. So I think it's something that definitely needs to go up there. But it's also one of the reasons that, you know, I've been harping for years about, you know, getting into term limits and even increasing the House of Reps. I mean, the reality is that a representative is only elected for 2 years. And he spends the majority of that time trying to get reelected. So, you know.
That's because of the size of the district. I mean, you can't reach 700,000 people in any reasonable way. So you're spending almost all of your time out trying to run for reelection because you have to reach so many people.
Well, I think today with technology, you can reach them a lot easier than you've ever been able to in the past. With social media,
true.
Email, everything else, you can get your message to a lot of people in a short amount of time. So, you know, but the real thing for me, though, is if you've got to spend the majority of 2 years trying to do fundraising and everything else, keep your job, then how much time are you actually spending doing your job? And that's one of the things that I've always tried to point out is we have a Senate. And we have a House. Why is the House not elected at least on 4 years? Why not put both the House and the Senate on 4-year alternating schedule for election? For example, you know, this year you elect the House. 2 years from now you'd elect the Senate. 2 years after that, the House. You see what I'm saying? So you're not exactly rolling the House and the Senate all out at the same time and losing any experience. And then if you stop that on a 2-term limit, how hard is that going to be for the lobbyists and special interests to buy politicians off?
Well, I think the only way you ever stop the lobbyists is increasing the number. I mean, I think that if it's still the same number of people, if it's still 435 in the House and 100 in the Senate, well, you only have to buy off 218 people in the House and 51 in the Senate, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's the math. So until you're able to say, oh, well, in order to get this rammed through, I'm going to have to buy off 2,100 people in the House and, you know, however many in the Senate, I think you're always going to see those special interest groups out there, especially really making a big, you know, being able to buy these politicians. And, you know, we saw that with the NSA vote, Ed. We saw that when the NSA vote came out the way it did. There was analysis done on where these people who voted against the NSA rollback amendment, the so-called Amash amendment, that would have rolled back the NSA's powers to spy on all of us, innocent Americans. You look at the people who voted against it, and of course, lo and behold, they're all the people who get the most money from the defense industry and from the NSA-type entities. And it's like, well, gee, what a shock. The people, you know, they're not idiots. They know where their bread is buttered. And that's a problem. I think that if we are in a situation where and maybe I'm wrong, but I really believe that the majority of Americans do not want the NSA spying on us, the American people. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I can't believe that that's really what the American people want our government to be doing, is spying on ourselves. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, from the looks of it, I think you're right, because fortunately they're doing it every day now. You know, but what's really interesting here, too, when you look at the premise you've got of more representatives would create less opportunity to be bought, you know, I can agree with that. But at the same time, I think it's something that can be worked in conjunction with the term limit, because you pointed out that Barack Obama is a lame duck president at this point. As far as I'm concerned, he was lame before he ever got there, but that's beside the point. You know, but if he's a lame duck president, special interests really aren't going to have to waste a lot of time with him right now. They're going to be setting up his successor. So the thing for me is, when you look at the term limit principle and you add in adding more reps as well, I think those two things in conjunction would work really well hand in hand, because you're not, as a lobbyist, invest any money in the last year or two of somebody that's term limited out in the House or the Senate. You're going to be building for the future. So you're going to have to start hedging your bets a little bit better, if you will, and maybe spread that money around a little bit further, which will weaken the value that you're getting for a politician. You know, I don't think that we can get more people in the House But what can we do to get more accountability? I guess guess what I'm after.
Well, what it comes down to, Ed, honestly, is the voters. And that's what it really comes down to. I mean, this article that came out about the 10 Republicans who shut down the government, one of the 10 that they list is Thomas Massie. And Massie, I mean, this is hilarious. This is so written by establishment politicians.
Sure.
This is what they're seriously concerned about this, all right? I'm going to read this verbatim because it's just so awesome.
Okay.
And they're saying this is a bad thing. A freshman congressman, an MIT graduate, Massie is unconcerned about voter backlash to the shutdown. In fact, Massie would welcome a return to his life as a private citizen. Quote, "The last thing I fear is going back and leading that same life," unquote, Massie said in an interview with Bloomberg. He's also pretty sure that the shutdown isn't a big deal. Quote, "I have a lot of IRS employees in my district, and I spoke with them. They told me, quote, we've been through these shutdowns before. It's not a big deal. We go home, we come back a few days or a week later, and we still get paid." So that was the horrible thing that they had written up about Massie, that, oh, my gosh, he doesn't care about not coming back. Oh, no. And I'll tell you, honestly, Ed, I think that's what we need more of. And I don't necessarily care if they're left or right or whatever. You know, I mean, obviously, I want it to be someone who does represent their district. But they should be primarily concerned about doing what's right for the district and for the country, not about getting reelected. And I think go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think in this case, government is operating exactly the way it's supposed to, and I tell you why. This is the 18th shutdown we've had since 1977. 16, the very first 16 shutdowns that we had, the Democrats controlled Congress, and they forced a shutdown. And the shutdown was forced over what? Because they didn't want to fund a specific part of the budget. And that specific part of the budget, in most cases during those 16 times, was defense spending. So, you know, the Democrats right now are the biggest hypocrites there are. They've shut down the government 16 out of 18 times because the House did not want to find a specific budget item. It's the same thing the House did now. The only difference is it's Obamacare instead of defense spending or something else that they wanted. So, you know, this is the House doing their job. They're supposed to be stewards of our money. They're supposed to originate all spending bills and all spending. They're supposed to put the budget forward. So if they put a budget forward, and it has literally given the money to every function of government there is, with the exception of the individual mandate of Obamacare, then who really is the obstructionist right now? Why are the Republicans taking all the heat? Because the Democrats have a short memory, and these liberals who continue getting something for nothing continue following the lies of their political leaders. I mean, that's all there is to it.
I had a great story here about the guy who thought Obamacare was great until he found out he had to pay for it. And, you know, there's...
Yeah, it's free. It's free. Go ahead.
Yeah. Wait, it's not free. Wait, what? You mean I have to buy this? Oh. And, you know, Ed, the first day of the exchange was open, I hopped on at 2 in the morning before it crashed. And it was actually pretty speedy at 2 in the morning. There weren't a lot of people on then, I guess. But I hopped on and took a look. You know, I've talked about this on the show before. You know, I have a high-deductible health plan with an HSA. I have it by choice. I love that plan. And unfortunately, the Affordable Care Act has deemed my plan illegal because, ironically enough, it's too affordable. And so
right.
I am not allowed to keep my health care plan at the end of this year. So, of course, I'm in the market to find out. I mean, I've had that plan for seven or eight years. I have no idea.
But, see, that's a lie, though, Ken. Don't lie to your audience because President Obama told you when he passed Obamacare that you would get to keep health plan, right? Of course, I'm
sure. Right. Well, you know, and then you go back to Pelosi. You got to pass it to find out what's in it, which is probably the dumbest line ever uttered by any politician ever, any legislator ever. Is I don't know what I'm voting on. We got to pass it and find out. Why?
Yeah.
But so what we did find out is that my health care plan is illegal. So I'm genuinely interested to find out what's out there. You know, I have no idea what the traditional insurance costs anymore. I mean, I've been in an HSA with a high deductible health plan for 7-8 years. So, wow, is it expensive. And, you know, quite honestly, the exchange is ridiculous. I mean, I make enough money. I'm not subsidized in any way. So, wow, my health care costs are going to more than double because I'm losing my HSA and high deductible health plan. Now, that's assuming that my employer doesn't still pick up a portion, but Ed, I'll tell you, honestly, I'm sure my employer is no different than many others, is that as the health care costs have been going up, they've been shifting more and more of the cost to the employees. So I don't see the Affordable Care Act making anything more affordable. I see it lining the pockets of insurance companies. I see it increasing the amount of red tape and bureaucracy and compliance mm-hmm. garbage that the hospitals and medical care providers have to go through. I see this costing more money. And, in fact, the Congressional Budget Office now in their newest revised numbers, because they only ever look ahead 10 years from day one, they look ahead 10 years. Now, with modern numbers, you know, now that we're 4 years past the passage of the Affordable Care Act, all of a sudden, looking forward 10 years, this thing actually increases costs. Not significantly, but it does not lower costs at all from what the baseline would have been anyway. And it actually slightly increases them, all the while people like me get screwed because I don't get to keep my insurance that I actually like.
Well, let me put a couple of things out there because I think you'll understand. Because I went on myself, and I went ahead and just wanted to play some numbers, so I went on to the calculator and all that crap to do it. And my medical costs were going to cost me about $15,000 a year out of my pocket, and that's with a clean bill of health. That isn't my real medical history. That was with a clean bill of health. You know, we've got stories all over the country. We've got a disabled mom in Allentown, Pennsylvania. You know, she's got a 5-year-old son and her husband. You know, now they've got to decide. They went to try to get Obamacare and found out the premiums were going to add thousands of dollars to their current plan that they can't afford. She's a disabled mom with a 5-year-old son. So we've got these things going all over the country. But what's really amazing here is nobody wants to talk about the real argument. And the real argument is simple. At this point in time, I don't care if you like Obamacare. I don't care if you dislike Obamacare. For or against doesn't matter. But at this point in time, any implementation of Obamacare has to be deemed as nothing more than illegal. And here's why. The Congress passed Obamacare in 2009. They passed a law in 2009 for Obamacare. That law covered corporations, businesses, when they started, everything else. The Congress has never changed that law. Barack Obama did. Barack Obama went ahead and exempted your business, your corporations, and gave them a free ride until after the 2014 election. The only thing standing with Obamacare today really is the individual mandate. So this law that was passed by Congress was changed by the president, the illegal authority. At this point in time, whether you're for or against, this is an illegal law. It's an illegal tax. So the fact that nobody wants to talk about that is pretty telling, because the Republicans, that should have been their first argument, and it wasn't. So, you know, we've got a lot of things going on behind the scenes here. This is not just one side or the other. This is the unit party colluding, working together to create this kind of garbage. You know, but it's interesting. Nobody wants to talk about that. It cannot be enforced because it's illegal once you started exempting everybody without congressional approval.
Well, and that's, you know, I know Ed Martin, your co-host on Monday and Tuesday nights, had a great idea, which is, okay, fine, we'll fund Obamacare as long as you implement it 100%.
Exactly. Well, and that's the way it's supposed to be anyway.
And I'll tell you what.
Right.
I'll tell you what. You put that caveat on it and then watch them squirm. Because what are they going to say? No. We can say we offered to fund it. We offered to fully fund it if they implement it all. And they said, no, we don't want to implement it all. We want to have our special exemptions, these guys and these guys.
And what's really interesting, too, that the House has already sent over to the Senate and agreed. Now, if you remember when all this was going to start, what did Harry Reid say? He wanted a 6-week extension because they offered a 1-week originally out of the House. The Senate Democrats came back and said they wanted a 6-week extension on spending bills and everything else before they would talk. So last week, the House sent over a plan to give them the 6-week extension that they want. And they even offered a caveat for Obamacare to take away the medical device tax. So they gave Harry Reid what he wanted, but they couldn't compromise and even talk about that. So, you know, this is clearly nothing but by design. Right now, you have to blame the Democrats because the Republicans have already tried to fund everything. They even agreed to the 6-week deal that Harry Reid wanted, you know, and he still won't come to the table because Barack Obama will not let him. So, you know, this is a big story, but the mainstream news is not doing anything about it. That's the problem, because people want to get these 30-second sound bites from mainstream news, and they don't have a clue what's really going on.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. I think in general, and this kind of speaks to more of a broader topic here, not just Obamacare, but in general. People are very dissatisfied with government in general. I mean, we've seen the congressional approval ratings at 5%. Obama, in some polls, is down below 40%. Congressional Republicans are down, you know, Republican Party's down around 20-something percent. Democratic Party's at 30-something percent. Everybody's very dissatisfied. And, you know, these stupid closures, everything else, people are upset about that. And I'll tell you the real thing that people are most upset about is everybody knows this. Everybody in their gut knows and has known for some time that the recession never ended. It quit getting deeper, but it never got better. And it's been since 2009 now. And I've seen multiple articles, multiple studies, surveys, all the different numbers involved, and everything says the same thing, is that the economy, it bottomed out in 2009, and it had a slight bounce, and then it's just been hovering ever since. And the American public, I found a survey that came out about a month ago now, that says the American public themselves say that the U.S. economy seems no more secure than it did 5 years ago. You look at these, you take out all the bogus stats that the government has done to finagle the unemployment numbers. If you look at the real unemployment, which is the people who could be working and aren't, right, that number is closer to 23%, huge number.
Well, I've got to interrupt you right there, man, because now you're just making me angry because you're clearly a racist and it's all Bush's fault and you're not telling your audience. of course it is, and that's the whole thing. We live in a real world, and this recession is going to get a lot worse. When you add in all the jobs, the full-time jobs that are being downgraded to part-time work, you look at all these companies that are downsizing so they can avoid the Obamacare. And it's, you tell me why it's wrong for Republicans to stand up, and we have so many people that are not going to be able to afford Obamacare that it was supposed to help. It was supposed to be free. You know, you have all of these different factors coming in. The business is downsizing. Unemployment is going to get worse. The recession is going to get worse. It's never got better. You know, the little bump that everybody's talking about, that was just manipulating numbers. It wasn't real math. So, you know, you're absolutely right on where you're going. You know, the question is, how do you fix it? I think right now, the longer this government stays down, the closer we'll get to having some kind of idea of how to fix it. I really do.
I think you may be right. I mean, it's getting so bad out there, Ed, that especially for Democrats. And this is the thing. They keep saying that this is bad for Republicans. But I'm telling you, there's an underswell, an under-the-covers swelling of the grassroots people that were for Obama that are just fit to be tied. You know, Gitmo's still open. All these promises that Obama made, the only thing he ever came through on was Obamacare, which is why he's guarding it so much, because it's the only thing he did get done.
Oh, sure.
And he did end Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military, which, whatever. I'm okay with that. But the Obamacare stuff was really his – that is going to be his legacy. And so if you destroy Obamacare, he has no legacy left. And all these guys are kind of egomaniacal, crazy people that they want to have that legacy. So it's gotten so bad that there's articles that are coming out about, Democrats and Republicans really are different. I mean, you're starting to see these articles come out from Democrats and Republicans because the average American can't tell the difference anymore. They're like, oh, no, look over here. If we split this hair real finely, see, that's where they're different, this really, really fine thing. But the thing is, people don't care about that anymore. What people care about are answers to problems. And we're starting to see that there's a governor's race over in Virginia right now, and it's a three-way race. There's a Republican, a Democrat, and a Libertarian. Libertarian's polling almost at 10%. Some polls he's as high as 12. They've done everything they can to keep him out of the debates because – I'm telling you, if he could actually heard, this guy is – well, yeah, and given the mood of the public and the way this gentleman speaks and his demeanor and his intelligence and his knowledge and breadth of the issues, if he gets out in front of the public, he could actually win. And so the point is that they've done everything they can to keep him out. And I think that that's what we're going to see more and more of. We're starting to see the rules with the southern states – What is being reported the most is the stuff about having to show voter ID, which I actually agree with that part of it, right? Having to show voter ID to vote, I mean, show an ID. It's not that hard. Everybody has one. And in the case that you don't have one, if you pass a law that says you have to have ID to vote, then you have to make ID free. And that's it. The end. Driver's license is for free or state-issued ID free. Whatever. Done.
Well, even Mexico has a voter ID law, and they issue the IDs free. So, you know, I mean, it's not really that bad of a thing to do here. Two things real quick, and I'll let you go, sir. I apologize for taking up your time. But one, you talk about there's no difference between the Democrats and Republicans, but people are trying to act like there are. Now, I totally agree. It's been a party at work. But mainstream media, there always used to be a difference as well, because you'd have Fox sitting over here on the side. Everybody would talk about Fox was so right, they'd never go left. And then you had, you know, PMSNBC and, you know, CNN and all that other crap. You know, it's interesting because you were talking at the beginning of the show about the veterans that went to Washington and removed the barricades. You know, one of the fascinating things about this, we have pictures, we have eyewitnesses, we have live reports and live cams online you can look at. But, you know, the truckers had announced that they were going to go to D.C., and Fox actually reported, I think it was yesterday, it may have been Friday, but Fox reported that the trucker going to D.C. was all a hoax. It wasn't real. So for all those who think that Fox is non-biased, I think again, because we have the reports and everything else, that we know that the truckers were there because they had traffic blocked for at least a 10-mile-long convoy. So we know the truckers were there. We also have eyewitness accounts of thousands of people, maybe not a million, but thousands of people, veterans, civilians, truckers, everybody, that went to D.C., but the mainstream media totally ignored it. But you can bet when you look at your news channel, you're going to see a weatherman outside with an umbrella over his head to tell you it's raining. So, you know, that's what really goes on. I want to put this out real quick. Tomorrow night on the Ed Springsteen Show right here at 7 o'clock, we have David Adams on as a guest. And we will actually have National NBC checking out the show and everything else. So make sure, you know, David Adams is coming on. Obamacare is such a big thing. And as you know, David has filed lawsuits against Steve Beshear's illegal implementation of Kentucky Neck or whatever he wants to call it. But he'll be here live tomorrow night to discuss the ongoing legal battle. And we'll have a National NBC audience available as well. So make sure you guys check that out. I appreciate it, Ken.
Yeah. Congrats. Ed, take it easy. Thanks for calling in. I always appreciate it. And I'm sure I'll camp out on one of your shows in the near future again, too. So you have a good night. And we've only got about a minute left, folks. So I just want to tell you, you know, as I mentioned, people out there are getting it. They're fed up. They're sick and tired of this BS. And everybody knows the game at this point. And everybody's sick of the game. And it's to the point where literally the Republicans and Democrats are putting out their spokespeople, their little underground people. Oh, no, there's a big difference between Republicans and Democrats. Oh, trust us. I mean, look, you know, Romney would have saved the planet and Obama's destroying it or something or other. Oh, really? How? Well, you know, Obama's policies are bad. And I just saw another one of these arguments today. Folks, if you look at the differences between, for instance, Romney Care and Obamacare, the differences were not that significant. To say that Romney would have stopped this, I disagree. I think he would have modified it. I think he would have changed it. But he wouldn't have stopped it. And that's the point. We need to have a different outlook, a different set of leaders, a different point of view. If you're going to change things, it's time to start changing things. We'll talk more next week about Sarvis over in Virginia. Folks, tune into the show tomorrow, at Ed Springsteen Show tomorrow and all through the week, and Dale the Truth on Thursdays. This has been another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Thanks for tuning in on the My View Matters Radio Network.